The following is an encore presentation of Conversations on Healthcare.
Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare. This week, we revisit an episode with Mark Cuban and discuss his venture, Cost Plus Drugs, which is looking to disrupt the prescription drug market. Now here's our hosts, Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter.
Our guest today is a well-known entrepreneur responsible for multiple startups in digital media, software development, and blockchain. The billionaire businessman is a popular co-host on the hit series Shark Tank and is the principal owner of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team.
He has increasingly lent his support on Shark Tank to startups that seek to address inequities in American healthcare. And recently, he launched his own enterprise, the Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drug Company, a public benefit company, an online direct-to-consumer pharmacy that aims to take on the high cost of prescription drugs.
Well, Mark Cuban, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And Mark, prescription drugs now are a major factor in the almost $4 trillion a year that gets spent in healthcare in this country. And one out of five Americans can't afford at least one of their prescription medication. And you say there are far too many middlemen in the prescription drug pipeline, which significantly adds to the cost. And you're promising to radically be transparent about the cost. How does that differ from the status quo?
I mean, significantly. I mean, there's very much a vertically integrated environment right now where health insurance companies own PBMs and own retail pharmacies and are expanding into other areas of healthcare. And they keep on creating these fortresses where they control the left pocket and the right pocket. And by having so much control, they're able to create an environment where pricing is opaque, it's confusing, and they have a lot of control. I mean, and on top of that, because they're able to contract with insurers and major corporations and consultants, they're able to play these games where they'll say, okay, if you want access to all these lives, then you have to do business manufacturers the way we want to do business. And that is unfortunate and creates a lot of pricing distortion for patients.
Well, Mark, our organization delivers care to a large, vulnerable population. And I think we do a pretty good job of helping patients access prescriptions at prices they can afford through various programs, but it does take an enormous and concerted effort. Medicare itself had been blocked from negotiating drug prices, but that's now changed under the president's Inflation Reduction Act. How do you think this new development is going to shift these issues that you've described in the marketplace?
I think it'll improve things, obviously, for the 10 drugs and then moving up to more drugs over a period of time. I think it's great for people on insulin who are on Medicare. It doesn't do much of anything for everybody else. You know, that's just the reality. And so where there are out-of-pocket limits, the $2,000 will make a big difference as well. But until you get to that $2,000 limit, there's going to be challenges for Medicare patients. And on top of that, you have Medicare Advantage, which is completely distorted, completely confusing, and completely rewarding, not to the patients, but to the owner of the Medicare Advantage company. And so it's just, there's still a lot of messiness, and that's one of the things we're hoping to attack.
Great. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that. Thanks so much.
Mark, a few months into your new venture, and you've just inked your first health plan deal, Capital Blue Cross in Pennsylvania, to provide low-cost prescriptions to their members. This space is highly competitive. So how did it come about, and how will it work for the consumers?
Well, for the consumers initially, and congratulations to the PBC in Harrisburg and Allentown. Capital has just been a phenomenal partner. The way it starts is they'll refer their patients to us, and then using a form, they'll reimburse them. We're updating our software so that shortly it'll all be automated. So you'll just buy through Cost Plus Drugs and everything from there in terms of applying to your deductibles of, and we're applying to the right programs. All those things will be handled on an automated basis. And with that, not only was Capital our first, but we're also partnering with Prime Therapeutics, which allows us to talk to a lot of other Blues. And we're hoping that leads to many other insurers to work with us. And obviously, we're also talking to many, many, many independents, because the, you know, other than the big three, it's very difficult to control their own pricing, and they're paying premiums, and they're kind of caught in the vortex of dealing with the PBMs. And so we're trying to yank them out of there, and the response has been great.
Well, Mark, it certainly seems that this approach could save billions of dollars each year for consumers. But you know, we point out, as I think our audience knows, it still only targets about 20% of the medication market, if you will, the generics, and non-generic drugs make up about 80% of total drug costs in America today. And these costs, as people who are on them know, can be just astronomical and often life-saving and absolutely essential. What do you think the chances are that your model could eventually expand in ways to the non-generic market, which is so protected, of course, by trademarks and regulations?
Absolutely, 100%. We'll make our first announcement tomorrow for our first branded partnership, which we're really excited about. We're in process of negotiation with many others. You know, they see the same problem. One of the challenges that manufacturers of branded drugs face is that they've been villainized. You know, everybody perceives that, using insulin as an example, everybody thinks that they're responsible for the increasing cost to patients for insulin, when we know, people in the industry know, that's just not the case. That the price that manufacturers sell insulin for has actually declined. If you look at their revenues for insulin, they've declined. And so part of why they're excited to work with Cost Plus Drugs is the transparency. Finally, now patients and others in the industry will be able to see exactly what we pay and what we charge for insulin. And for the drugs we're adding, not adding insulin, but the drugs we're adding. I misspoke there. We like to add insulin and we're having conversations, but we're not there yet.
You know, Mark, you said earlier that the pharmacy benefit managers play a big role in elevated drug costs, but we often hear that drug research and development is also baked into the cost to the consumer. And some say these low cost approaches will dampen the pace of new drug development. The Congressional Budget Office has indicated this is an overstatement. What do you say?
Well, you have to ask who's saying that. It's not really the manufacturers that are saying it. It's the lobbyists that are saying it. Manufacturers know that they're not going to bat 100% on their drugs. And so for certain, there's a price associated with R&D, or if you're not doing the R&D yourself, licensing or purchasing, and then getting all the approvals and all the marketing, there's a price associated with that. Some of them will fail at the trial level. Some of them will fail in the market. And so you've got to build all that into how they price. But what happens is, because the manufacturers, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, don't actually have control of their own retail or net price, that's where a lot of the distortions come in. And so again, if this was just an open market and it was 1955 and you just, you know, the pharmacy bought from the drug manufacturer and you sold it to the patient, and this was truly free market, then you would see that, you know, which drugs made it, which drugs failed, approximately how much they spent, and you would have an understanding of a fair price to charge. Now, that's one element of it. Part two, particularly as it applies to specialty drugs, which are the ones that are very expensive and have the high levels of sticker shock, you know, there's a different equation for determining whether or not a price is fair. If there is a medication that adds 10 years to your life and eliminates having to go to the hospital, is $5 million too much? You know, if, you know, the cost of going through care and being in the hospital to take care of that disease before the medication was in place was greater than $5 million, well, somebody's saving money. The problem in all of this is that it's not the insurance companies that are typically saving the money. And that creates the push-pull that is creating problems as we talk about specialty medications. And that creates a lot of what, you know, challenges, depending on which side of the ball you're on, for people going to the specialty drug programs because the insurance companies don't want to pay for them. They're trying to force those patients to specialty programs, which, you know, so effectively they're trying to get the manufacturers to provide these high-end expensive medications for nothing, right? So that the insurers don't have to pay what they're obligated to pay. So all that said is, I don't think that there's a world for specialty drugs where the current healthcare insurers are able to model what their out-of-pocket expenses are going to be for specialty drugs. Because, you know, it's almost impossible to project which ones are coming and which ones will succeed. It's almost impossible to project the actual impact, even though, what do they call it, Incel or Insight, I forget the name of the organization that tries to do a cost-benefit analysis. They try, but you've got, again, you've got this challenge that what the insurers want, the people who were looking to pay for it, and what the patient wants and what the manufacturer wants are not aligned at all. And so I happen to think that over the next 5 years, it's going to be very politically expedient for some administration or some politicians to say, you know what, we need a public-private partnership that excludes insurance companies so that these high-end specialty drugs, even if they're $500,000, $1 million, $5 million, $20 million, whatever it may be, are evaluated to make sure that pricing is fair. Two, by having a public-private partnership, one of the challenges for those specialty drug manufacturers is percentage of valid patients receiving the medication and them getting paid for it. Mm-hmm. So if there is a medication, let's just say for easy math, that has $1 million price tag and has a potential annual patient base of 1,000 people, right? Right now, they're not going to be able to get approvals for all 1,000 of those potential patients. And the reality is they're struggling to get any percentage of those patients paid. And it's more high-end people like me who are able to afford those things. And so through a public-private partnership in some independent research, you'll be able to say to them, look, you can't charge $1 million for these 1,000 patients, but we'll guarantee you that all 1,000 patients will be able to pay for it, and we will buy your drug from you for all 1,000, but you're only going to charge $500,000 so that you net out at $500 million in revenue as opposed to your hope for $1 billion in revenue, you know, a million times 1,000. Mm-hmm. And let's work that way so that, you know, it's fair to you as a business. You know, you have incentives to keep on releasing, buying, or developing these specialty drugs. It's fair to the patients, all of them who have valid prescriptions from their doctors, from the provider, are able to get it, which is the most important part. And we take the organizations that are the inhibitors, the private insurers, who don't want to pay for it and don't see the financial benefit from it. Because if, you know, across all the financial, all the insurance companies, if they paid out $1 billion, their math probably says and their models that they're not going to get $1 billion in savings. So they do all they can to prevent paying for it. And so we need to be honest and straightforward and have some transparency. And if the manufacturers of the specialty drugs are willing to do that and we're able to everybody get on the same page, then I think we save a lot of lives and improve the healthcare system. If they don't, and we have this continued push-pull, like it always happens, where the insurers do their best to deny claims or pre-authorizations, then we have problems. That was a longer answer than you were looking for, wasn't it?
It was a compelling answer, and I think we have another interview, another show perhaps in our future to really tease this out more. I can tell you it's pretty awful on the ground where the patients live, as this issue is dealt with on a regular basis. But let me pivot just a bit, Mark. You know, the COVID pandemic amplified so many shortcomings and inadequacies in our healthcare system, and supply chain was right at the top. We were caught short on so many things we needed to protect our healthcare workers and the public. But you're going to actually be scaling up your own drug manufacturing factories for cost plus drugs. So tell us about that, and what other supply chain issues do you see as ripe for disruption?
So effectively, there are a lot of drugs that go into shortages, particularly generic drugs, where there's just not enough of a market for a manufacturer to continuously produce them. And so what ends up happening is they just jack up the price. We've seen that happen multiple times. Or you get in a situation where you know, you have sterile water like now, which is hard to come by. And even though it's not hard to make, there's just no manufacturers to do it. Mm-hmm. So with Cost Plus Drugs, we created, we're finishing out actually a manufacturing plant in Dallas, Texas, that is robotically driven so that it only takes us 4 hours to turn our manufacturing from one injectable to the next. And so starting with things like sterile water, we'll talk to all the hospitals and all the providers that need it. We'll come up with a fair price that covers our cost, because as a manufacturer, we can't just do it a straight cost plus 15%. Our costs are much higher as a manufacturer. But we'll be, you know, compelling, transparent price, and we'll make it available for whatever injectables are in short supply. And then when we fill that need, it takes 4 hours for us to cycle to the next drug. We'll do the next one. Then 4 hours, we'll do the next one, and then the next one, and so on and so forth. And if it works out well, we have plenty of room to expand, to add more and more for oral medications, you name it. We'll be able to expand to it, presuming that everything goes the way we expect it to.
Mark, one of the health companies you developed is Unite Genomics, which you say is focused in on advancing medicine through large-scale analysis of genomic and health data, especially for rare disease. How does Unite Genomics dovetail off similar efforts like NIH All of Us Research Project or the Patients Like Me? And perhaps more broadly, how will genomics and personalized medicine shift the future drug development landscape?
Well, the honest answer, Mark, is I don't know. I've been so focused on Cost Plus the last few years. The guys at Genomics know their stuff, and they run their show really, really well. But just generically, generally, you know, our bodies are one big math equation. We don't know how many variables are in that equation, and we don't know what all the variables are. But every single day with advancements in chips and GPUs and just about every other core component of artificial intelligence, we're learning more and more and more about our bodies, and we're aggregating more and more information from all the experiments and all the tests and all the trials and all the databases that we're able to have access to. And when you start mixing those together over time, you truly do get to the point where you have more and more personalized medicine. And that's part of their goal, to be part of that revolution. Again, I wish I had just looked up, I just haven't had the time just to keep up with them. I'm just trying to keep up with what's going on at Cost Plus.
Well, you have a lot to keep track of, and this question may be in the same category, but maybe not. You know, you're certainly well familiar with startups and the challenges, and I assume both success and failure. But in healthcare, of course, there's so much at stake with failure in any element of healthcare. What have your startup experiences in other areas taught you about how you're going to go about this process with your new company, doing it without harm? Share with us what you've learned about the process.
I mean, data matters, care matters, being transparent matters. Because, look, there's no mistake-free anything anywhere, whether it's healthcare or selling nachos at a Mavs game. You know, there's always going to be mistakes. The challenge for patients, as it applies to healthcare, is we're not as transparent as we need to be. And when you're not transparent, then people don't trust it. And the reality is, the number one product that Cost Plus Drugs sells is trust. You know, if you think about the process of getting a prescription these days, typically you go to the doctor, and if it's the first time, the doctor says, sorry, you need to get this, whatever it is. What's your pharmacy? And then you just get the prescription sent to your pharmacy. And then when you get to the pharmacy doesn't know what they're going to charge you until they ring it up. And you don't know what you're going to be charged. You're hoping all your insurance covers it. And you don't know, typically, you may or may not know your copay. And then, you know, you don't know what all your options are. And so I think the true missing piece as it relates to your question, Margaret, is transparency. We have to get to the point of trust. We trust our doctors, but I mean, look at just hospitals. Everybody wants to trust hospitals. Everybody pretty much does trust the doctors in those hospitals. But when it comes to organizational or administrative, they can't even get them to do what's legally required of them with transparent pricing on their websites. You know, there's people paying the ridiculously low $100 a day or whatever it is, and who are ignoring the obligation to really provide the numbers in a way that's understandable. I mean, when I, you know, I had a CT colonoscopy and I had a CT just because I do them every couple of years and I just pay cash price. I don't even go through, you know, my insurance simply because A, we self-insure and B, I kind of like going through all the hospital spreadsheets to see what the pricing is, but I'm certainly the exception and not the rule. Without transparency, there's not trust. And when you have organizations creating reasons for, and hospitals, providers creating reasons for them not to be trusted, then that's where things go south and they become politicized. You know, there's just so many ways that we can improve it, but everybody's, you know, fighting for their next dollar instead of fighting for their next patient. Not everybody, that's not fair, but a lot from the administrative side. I mean, look, in healthcare, what is it, 21% of the total cost of healthcare in this country is administrative? And there's so many easy things that you can do. You could standardize contracts. Right? Network contract for every hospital, use a standardized contract that is reviewed, whether it's annually or biannually, whatever it is, and just the numbers change and cut the cost and all the retail or all the detailed research that has to be done every time someone walks in the door with a different network or a different insurance plan, and it has to go up the flagpole 6 feet deep. And then the provider does everything possible to complicate it. My mom died of cancer this past February.
Yeah, sorry to hear.
And we went, thank you. And she went in to get, to talk to the doctors, and the doctor says she needed a PET scan. Okay, let's get her a PET scan while she's here. No, you can't get a PET scan while you're in the hospital. You have to leave the hospital and come back more than 3 days later. Mm-hmm. So they get paid the most. My mom was like, no, that's ridiculous, you know, and it cost her and it cost me and it cost my family, because this is the ridiculousness that patients have to face. And it's not like the hospitals don't know what they're doing. When they upcode, when they recode, when they dual code, you know, we saw all the article in the New York Times for Medicare Advantage. Right? Yeah. That's insane. You know, put me in charge, I'll make a criminal if you do that. Period, end of story. Because once you create distrust in the healthcare system, you get what we had with COVID, where people don't trust. You know, they don't believe anybody in what they're saying. We don't know what something's going to cost before we go to a doctor. And there's some trying to create transparency, but the games that people play at providers, you know, a friend of mine runs a hospital. It's weird how it all played out. Guys I grew up with run, there's several hospitals, and so I keep in touch with them, and they had built this building, and they were asking me what I thought was the best approach to getting more people to the building. And I was like, there's only one answer. Sell the MF building, take that and reduce the rates, you know, and make it more accessible. You don't need a fancy building. You need the equipment you need. You need the doctors you need. You know, you don't need fancy buildings, yet that's what you see on every hospital campus. Fancy buildings. And, you know, I worked with a group and I asked a very simple question. And if this is too far afield, just tell me.
No.
I'm like, Toronto, Canada, right? Their real estate is more expensive than Manhattan. Their doctors get paid the same. Their nurses get paid the same as hospitals in Manhattan. Why are all their procedures less than Medicare? And it's really simple when you start looking at it. One, they're mostly non-private rooms. You're going to have, I actually had kidney stones in Toronto one time. They put me just a little curtain around me, right, which I was fine with. They took care of me, but it was not a private room, and I was great. In our hospitals, you know, once you get past the municipal hospitals, it's all private rooms. And in Canada, they pay for all of the doctor's liability insurance. In Canada, the hospitals are sure they'll get paid for all the patients that come through the door. These are little things that we complicate here in the United States through DSH and no liability compensation. And, you know, everybody's trying to be fancy. When you do that and there's not a lot of transparency, people aren't going to trust, and it's going to be more expensive, and people are going to go without healthcare. And that's just insane.
Mark, on one side, you're battling on the trust and transparency side, and you're coming up against, on the other side, some legacy players in the big pharma world with a lot of skin in the game. CVS Caremark made about $150 billion in prescription drug space in 2021 alone, and Walmart and Costco have well-established supply chains and market share. You've got Amazon turning to direct consumer drug purchasing as well. Use a basketball analogy. How do you outshoot the legacy teams? What's your edge in this really crowded field and when so much profit is hanging in the balance?
Well, there's this old saying I use all the time. When you run with the elephants, there's the quick and the dead. And we're really, really quick. We're agile. We're evolving all the time. You know, we started off just mail order. Hopefully within the next 60 to 90 days, we'll have a discount card. So you'll be able to pick up at a local pharmacy at our pricing because they'll have, you know, buy from us and agree to our pricing. And on top of that, rather than some of the other discount cards do, which is charge the pharmacies for the traffic, we'll actually pay the pharmacies for fulfillment. Or I should say that we'll let them charge, which I think the pharmacies are going to love. So that's one way to do it. You look where the greed is. You know, Jeff Bezos famously said, your margin is my opportunity. And that's exactly what's going on here. You know, Cost Plus Drugs already has more than a million accounts. 9 months in, more than a million accounts, and we're growing rapidly. By the time we finish this, we might be at a 1.1 million. And so, you know, if we get enough of a base, people are going to want to keep on working with us no matter what the other ones do. You know, maybe they come along and match our pricing. That's okay by me. Maybe they come along and do the same thing and just copy us. That's okay by me. If the net result is, okay, Cost Plus isn't as big as it might have otherwise been, but everybody's playing Cost Plus 15%, hello, you know, problem solved. And so, you know, of course, that's easier for me to say than for all that to happen. But at the same time, when you're as big and public, as the big three, and you're as vertically integrated, and there's so much right pocket, left pocket, where, you know, they create or buy this company where they send some margin there, and then that company buys from another one of their subsidiaries and they send some margin there, it's awful, awful hard for them to be cost competitive. There's just too many layers and too much hierarchy for that to work. They might be able to absorb some losses to try to combat us, but I think we'll be okay. And I think, again, our number one product is not a medication. Our number one product is trust. And if those other outlets were truly trusted, we wouldn't have any customers.
Mark, I heard you say in the last answer to Margaret's question that if someone puts you in charge, is this an announcement of any candidacy that we can report on?
No, absolutely not. No, my family would disown me. Absolutely not. But you know, some of these providers need skin in the game in terms of their obligations to living up to the law. $100 fine per day isn't going to make anybody change their actions. You know, there's just so many, you know, fraud, you know, and pay a fine. That's not going to make anybody change their actions. There's just so much money involved, and that money keeps on getting bigger, and the fines become a smaller, smaller percentage. You know, the minute somebody that works in anywhere in that food chain in a major corporation is at fear of going to jail, it all changes. It all changes.
We've been speaking with entrepreneur and Shark Tank host Mark Cuban, who has launched an online entity, Cost Plus Drugs, seeking to shake up the prescription drug market with low-cost generic prescription drugs. You can follow our show and learn more about all of our guests at chcradio.com. Thank you to our audience for joining us today. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us. And we continue to follow your innovative innovations.
Thanks, guys, for having me on. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.